Good evening. I am Gail, and I am an alcoholic. Hi. My sobriety date is June 20th, 1988. My sponsor is Judy A., and my home group is the Wednesday night Pass It On Big Book Study in Mission Valley. And I say those three things because they're very important to me. Hey. I got some friends here. That's good. Hey! Woohoo! OP's in the house! Right on. There we go. I'm from OP. What can I say? I was born the youngest of seven kids. Scottish. But not Catholic. So I didn't have the guilt. Anyhow, I was, you know what, and my father was alcoholic, and, he would lose the car on Friday nights, and, I didn't really think anything was wrong with it, you know, but, it was a chaotic childhood, you know. He was a rager, and I remember one time, he was screaming and throwing pots and pans from the kitchen through the dining room to the front hall. And my sister and I were in our pajamas, and we ran outside and we hid behind the fireplace, the outside of the fireplace. And that was what it was like. It was unpredictable in my house. It was very unpredictable. When I was 13, my father drowned in the San Francisco Bay. He drowned in an alcohol-related accident. He fell overboard. And what was so ironic about that is he had been a sailor all his life. He owned sailboats. He was from Michigan, sailed the Great Lakes, and died when he fell overboard. He had been drinking all day long over at Jack London Square. I'm from the Bay Area originally. So when he died, that was really my exit from God and from everything else. I mean, I was a foxhole believer because at that point at 13, I turned to drugs and alcohol to stop the pain. And, by 17, I had a 29-year-old boyfriend. He was a drug dealer, and drugs are a big part of my story. And, big part of your story, Jim. And I got to tell you, we probably partied together at Diego's in Pacific Beach. It was one of my old haunts. When he died after that, I was, just in a tailspin. And as I said, by 17, I was running with a really, really tough crowd. And it was guns, drugs, and a lot of money. And we were up in the Bay Area. And, I brought home this man for Thanksgiving. We pulled up on a Harley, and he had a full scraggly beard, black leather jacket. And I brought him in for the family Thanksgiving dinner. And that went over really well. But you know what? He was a magician, and he did some magic tricks, right? So anyhow, yeah. And that, just changed the names and the places, and that was what it was like for me. My first treatment for alcoholism was cocaine. It kept me upright. And I think maybe some of you can relate to that. Always smoked dope. Always. And in between the coke, the booze, and the dope was, whatever else I could get my hands on. And I remember one time I thought it was a good idea. I was in high school and had the bottle of red wine, had the doobie, and some coke. And then I thought, you know what? I got this new drug. It was new to me. Amyl nitrate. I think I'll, take a big sniff of this, and I swear to God, that's when I thought I'd gone a little bit too far. And how we're always trying to get right to the edge, right? And then you shoot the mark. That was that. I moved up. I tried to go to college through all this. I was actually fairly bright, and I tried to go to San Francisco State University, and I was on the journalism of the newspaper up there, and I just couldn't do it. I got the award for the best excuse for not turning in my assignments. It was the Duck Award. And I don't really know why, but I got the Duck Award. And so, you know, I had to leave. I had to leave. I did a geographic, and I moved to Tahoe. My mom had a house up there, and so I was living up there. And you know what? What do you know? I found a new boyfriend. And this one was a doctor, an emergency room doctor, who had the best drugs and, you know, everything. And so life was good again. Until my drug dealer didn't show up at the bar that I was managing up there. And I was driving home drunk, and I could barely see, and I hit a railroad-type fence. And I went through the windshield. And I was about a block away from my home, so I tried to get home. And I was walking down the street, and before I could get home, the cops found me. And they took me in, and they detained me. And this was... They took me to the hospital, and in the hospital, I was in my party dress, and I had blood all down the front of me, and they had to stitch up like 20 stitches here and about 18 in my head, and they gave me a reverse mohawk, and I was in the holding cell up in Tahoe, and I was just crying. You know, it was one of those little epiphanies that we have. Oh, my God, how did I end up here, right? And I was I was like 20 years old, 21. Naturally, I had a fake ID. And I was, how did I get here? How did it happen? And I just started wailing, you know. And the real girls in the back, you know, were like, shut that bitch up. And I was like... You know, and I'm like, okay. So the next morning, when they finally released me, my brother's girlfriend came and picked me up. Now, a normal drinker, a normal person would say, you know what, you went through the windshield, you got stitches, you got a reverse mohawk, you ruined your party dress, you're in the jail, you know, let's call it a night, okay? But no, I got home, walked in the door, went upstairs, changed my clothes, poured a shot of Crown Royal, rolled a joint, lined it up, you know, and it was on, you know. And that's how I drank and used, just like that. And, I can go on and I can tell you all kinds of wonderful things about all my travels to Europe, all the countries I went into, smoked hash at the Matterhorn, smoked hash on the Eiffel Tower, drank under the piano in the popcorn club in Switzerland until I passed out. That's just how I did it, you know. And finally, my brother, shortly after that, big accident, my brother was living down here in San Diego. And he had a air charter service down at Brownfield. And he was like, you know what, Gail, why don't you come down to San Diego, go back to college, get your degree. You need your degree. And I said, fine. So I moved to San Diego. And for 2 years, I didn't do any drugs, but thankfully I was able to drink. He didn't really call me on my drinking. And so I still had my booze. And I went to San Diego City College, and I got a scholarship to KFMB Radio. And I was into journalism again, and I was starting to actually thrive in the industry. And I was hired on, and then I went back to school to UCSD. I transferred to UCSD and ended up getting my degree in political science. And in the meantime, I was still working at the radio news, but... You know, the coke was creeping back in, and the booze and everything, you know, and I just couldn't lay it all down. I just, no matter what. And I remember I was covering a lot of murders up in the Golden Hill area, and I would drive around Golden Hills at, you know, all hours of the night, and I would see this house, and it's on 30th and Cedar, and there'd be all these pathetic men out on the front porch. I mean, these guys were losers. All right? And I'd see these guys and I would say, my God, you know, well, they have no better place to go, right? So you remember that, all right? You just remember my thoughts about Cedar Street. And I was doing the drugs in the car. I was, you know, I'd be down. I was driving around in a big news car with antennas everywhere, KFMB radio on the side, billboard. And I'd be down on Imperial Avenue going to get my, you know, my doing my deal. And no fear. To the links we go, right? To the links we go. And I, you know, and so I did that for a while, and then finally, I felt bankrupt. There was something going on inside of me, and I didn't really know what it was, but I was partying really hard, and the booze wasn't really working, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. I did not know what was wrong with me, and up to this time, I really hadn't sought help, but, you know, I was living with my roommate, and my roommate, now, I knew she was an alcoholic, and I was just the drug addict. So the joke was, you go to Raleigh Hills, and I'll go to NA or something, right? That was the joke. And, you know, and then one day, I had been up in the Bay Area. I'd been up there with my boyfriend. Oh, this guy was a great one. This guy pulled out an 8-ball on Christmas Eve, and I said, where the hell has this been? He goes, well, I got it about 6 months ago. And I'm like, how the hell did you hold on to an 8-ball for 6 months? You know, that's not in my world, you know. And so, anyhow, you know, so I was with this guy, and he's like, you know, you're drinking too much. You know, you drink when you get home from work. And so we had been up in the Bay Area, and we bought all kinds of bottles of wine, and naturally, I drank them before we got home. We were going to save them. And, right, who wants to save them? I was actually a member of the Too Much Fun Club in the Bay Area. And, we drank them. I came home on the plane. Vodka orange on the plane. I got home, smoked a joint, got my Derringer machine out, and I was working the swing shift, you know, 3 o'clock at the radio station, and I just couldn't do it. And so I called Narcotics Anonymous, and the line was busy. I think I called AA, and the line was busy, and I think I called some other place to get help, right? And I thought, you know what? I tried. I'd made 3 attempts. I'm going in. I'm going into work. So I go into work, and I'm sitting there, and this is how long it was. We had typewriters in the newsroom. And I'm sitting there, you know, and I'm trying to do my story, and finally I'm just like, the gig's up. The gig is up. I'm tired. I'm 30 years old, and I am pooped. And so, you know what? I go into my news director, and I said, you know what? I need help. And he's like, can't you work your shift, you know? And I'm like, you don't really want me driving the news car. I said, I'm a liability. I've been drinking all this morning. Been partying for 3 days. He's like, okay, fine. And so, you know, I call my roommate. I'm like, Gemma, you got to come home straight after work because I turned myself in at work. She's like, what? You know, I ratted myself out. And I don't know why I did that. All I knew is that I knew something was really, really wrong with me. And in the big book, it says, we are doomed and we're sicker than we ever know. Right? We are so sick that we don't even know how sick we are. And I'm here to tell you, I was really sick. I was much sicker than I knew. And so that night I go home and I lived in Mission Valley on Friars Road, and my girlfriend came home, my roommate came home, and I rolled a big fat joint, finished up the rest of the blow, said stop at 7-Eleven, I got St. Pauli's Dark 6-pack for the road. I said, we're going to Scripps McDonald's Center. I said, take Genesee, okay? And for any of you know, that's the longest way possible, right? Long way to help. And so I took, you know, so we did that, and I think I drank like 3 of the beers. I was trying to chug them down. And I got to Scripps McDonald's Center, and I had no idea, you know, all I knew is that I really needed help. And they said, they did an assessment, and they said, oh, yeah, uh-huh, yeah, come on in. And so, so the next morning, I woke up, and I was like, what the hell did I do? Right? Because my job was attached to this. I'm like, what the hell did I do? And they said, so I went maniacal at the nurse, on the nurse's station. And so then they put me on Haldol. And they put me on Haldol for about a week, right? And I ate ice cream and sat on the couch and saw double. And that was it. That's how they calmed me down. You know, but it was during that time that I really wanted to do my first step. And they were like, no, you're not ready to do your first step. You know, and the first step and the steps we learned that we had to admit that we were powerless. And I wasn't ready to admit I was powerless. I was ready to admit I was powerless over drugs, but not alcohol. Mm-mm. I still had a friend in alcohol. And they were like, no, you don't. What did you do first? And my first drink was a Mickey's Big Bang. And then everything after that was just into my big mouth. So, you know, that's all. That's all it was. And so, you know, and I had a counselor at Scripps McDonald Center. Her name was Nora Dearheart. And I called her Nora No Heart. Because Nora No Heart, she had my number. She had my number, and she would call it all the time. And I hated her, you know. And my family came for family night, and, you know, she was trying to tell me that you need to go to an extended care facility. And I said, no, I need to go back to work. You know, I'm a professional. I've got a really big job. I need to be there. She's like, no. You'll crash and burn if you go back after 30 days. So I ended up going out to Rancho Labrie. And out at Rancho Labrie, I received another 30 days that I needed. I needed some time away. I needed to be institutionalized. And for all you people who come to AA and walk in the doors of AA and stay here, you know, my hat is off to you, because I could not do that. I needed to be taken off the streets and medicated and taken out of society and had therapy. I needed therapy. You know, I needed everything I could get. And so anyhow, I went to, so I'm at Rancho Labrie, and I graduate, and then I go into a home for professional women. It's me and this one other woman. We got a therapist, we got a maid, we got a cook, you know, life's great, right? And only then Mary gets drunk, and I'm the last one standing. And that wasn't too good. And so finally I go back to my condo, and you know, I'm in the first day back in my condo. I'm in my bathroom with a toothbrush scrubbing the shower. And my sponsor calls at this time, because I got a sponsor over at Scripps McDonald Center. And she said, what are you doing? Are you in the bathtub with your toothbrush scrubbing the tile? And I'm like, no, I'm in the shower scrubbing the tile. I was nuts, and she knew I was nuts. And that's why it's so important to have a sponsor, because they really help you. They helped me. She taught me what I was going to experience before I experienced it. Or when I was experiencing it, she was able to really kind of guide me through that whole process, because it was such uncharted water for me. So anyhow, so I go back to Rancho Labrie to watch my girlfriend take a 60-day token. And by this time, I have 90 days. And I go back there. And I'm out by the pool. If any of you ever been out to Rancho Labrie, it was actually kind of cool. They had a big pool, and they had a volleyball court, and you did therapy. It was like a little spa away from home. And so I'm out there, and I see this guy walk in, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm in love. And, you know, naturally, I had all of 90 days, and I think he had all of 9 months, but it didn't matter. It was love at first sight. And so, I'm like, hey, you know, he's like, hey. And so then, you know, we just part ways. It was a little awkward, right? But I was, by that time, I was really involved in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I really thank my sponsor at the time. She was from the Pacific Group. I had hardcore early sobriety guidance from the Pacific Group. And Donna D. Really made me do certain things, and one of them was to get involved. And so I got involved in all the conferences, and I was going to all the conferences, and so, anyhow, I was also going to the dances, and so I went to this Narcotics Anonymous dance, or AA dance, I can't remember, it was up in North Park, and I sat in the back row, and I was, like, doing the judge, you know, totally judging everybody, and I was like, oh, my God, it's filled with losers, why am I here? And all of a sudden, who walks in is the guy from Rancho Labrie, and I'm like, holy Toledo, the night just looked up. So I go over there, you know, and sure enough, I start talking to him, and, you know, it's AA love, right? Yeah. So, you know, it's always kind of awkward because you're sober, you know, but whatever. Who the hell's sober, right, when they're doing it? I was always three sheets to the wind. And so anyhow, you know, so we try to make it happen for like 9 months, you know, but I got to back up just a little bit. So I'm like, hey, so, you know, you got your own car? He's like, yeah. And, you know, I go, I got a job. He's like, yeah, I got a job too, you know. And I go, yeah, and I got a condo in Mission Valley. He goes, oh, I live over in Golden Hill. I said, really? Really? Where do you live in Golden Hill? Pathfinders. No way, you're one of those guys. But this guy was different, man. Oh, this guy was so different. So anyhow, So I used to call him my blonde god. You know, they said find a power greater than yourself. And there he was. Bam. And so anyhow, that lasted for all of 9 months, you know. But I hadn't worked the steps. I hadn't done my inventory. I hadn't really found out what was going on with me and why I acted and behaved the way that I acted and behaved so terribly in relationships. And so I worked my steps. It broke off, you know. He left, and I was throwing stuff at him just like I always did. And you know, he couldn't take me. I was too needy. And there it talks about relationships, about we depend on people far too much, or, you know, and they leave us. And that's what happened. He left me. And what I didn't know is that he was being spoon-fed at Pathfinders, which is a wonderful facility for men, and that I've come to love. And I am really kind of attached at the hip to the facility today. But anyhow, he left me. And so I went on and I did my steps, and I was heartbroken. And for 2 years, I threw myself into service, and I did what I was supposed to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to meetings. I arrived early. I did service work. I sponsored women. I called my sponsor, and I did whatever I was told to do. And one of the reasons is I was really afraid. I was afraid. Life for me without drugs and alcohol is super, super scary. I'm a misfit. I'm just a misfit. I'm not comfortable in my skin, and I just have a really hard time out there. I put on an air of bravado, and I think that I have I act like I have a lot of confidence, but really I'm a little frightened, and I'm squirrely out there. And so anyhow, I tried my best, and I think what's important for me about working the steps and coming to grips with who I was really having an epiphany of how selfish I really was and my behavior. And so I worked those steps, and I did all of that, and I trusted God. And I have to tell you that my relationship with God has evolved through the 25 years that I've been sober. It has never been the same. It's always different. You know, I'm one of those belligerent ones, and so it's been different. So about 2 years later, fast forward, I've done my steps. I've thrown myself into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not drink over that relationship, even though I was just shattered emotionally. I did not drink. You know, my sponsor had a saying. She goes, if you want to go down that road, there's an 800-pound gorilla down there. But if you want to tangle with him, you go ahead. Just don't drink. I went down the road, and I tangled with the 800-pound gorilla, but I didn't drink. I didn't pick up over it. And that's a really important message. You can do a lot in this program. You just don't drink. And so I didn't. And so 2 years later, I was back at another conference. I was on a blind date. And, you know, I was kind of like the guy, but not really. And so I'm there, and so I'm dancing, and there's a break in the band, and all of a sudden someone comes up and taps me on the shoulder, and I turn around, and it's the guy. It's the blonde god. And I'm like, holy Toledo, you know? And so I called my sponsor the next morning. I said, you're never going to believe who I woke up next to. And she said, let me guess. She knew. Well, I got to tell you, I got to get sober. Well, I am sober, but, you know, we went on to get married. We got married. We're an AA fairy tale. And, you know, we got married on my father's birthday, and my father wasn't around to walk me down the aisle. And my oldest brother did, which was really cool. And, you know, to this day, there's fathers in this audience, and, you know, I just want to reach out to you and say, you know, when my father died and left me, I felt screwed, abandoned. And, you know, when I think about how my life would be if my father never died, and if my father didn't die drunk, you know, but I'm blessed regardless, you know, and I was able to marry that man in AA, and we're still married today, and we have a very strong marriage, and we have a very strong marriage because of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're really blessed. And I got to tell you, you know, where I came from and what I do today, when I was out there, you know, with that 29-year-old biker dude, we were just breaking the law, breaking the law, breaking the law, breaking the law. That's all I did is break the law, you know. And today, you know, I make the law. I'm actually a registered lobbyist. I work for the district attorney. I make laws today up in Sacramento and secure federal funding in Washington. How the hell do you get from that to that without divine intervention? There's no way. There is just no way. You know, and I tell you, you know, it's just amazing. And I've been able to do, you know, in sobriety, you know, and I, and before, you know, I worked in television. I was the investigative reporter for Channel 8. I've been blessed. My life has been so blessed. I've been given so many opportunities. The only reason I got to be a television reporter is because I was sober. Really. That's it. The only reason that I'm working for the district attorney today is because I'm sober. Right? That's it. You know, my husband and I, we have an AA home. He sponsors a lot of men. I sponsor 6 women in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything I have today is a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to tell you that I was one of those dreamers that sat on the bar stool. I was a barfly. And I sat on the bar stool and I would dream about everything I wanted to do and where I was going. And, you know, although I did make it to Europe, you know, when I was drunk all the time. But I never did really, I mean, I kind of just fell from bar to bar over there, you know. And but now I've been able to, you know, 2 years ago I climbed Mount Whitney. I also summited Mount Kilimanjaro. I just did a 65-mile bike ride in Palm Springs. I've ran half marathons. I mean, I'm doing today what I only dreamed of, and it's a direct result of working the steps and finding a relationship with a higher power. You know, I got to tell you, as I said, there's this divine intervention, and I don't understand my relationship with God, and I don't understand God in the many forms that he shows himself to me. But I do know when I see it. And the other night at my big book study, and there's some people that were there here tonight, and there was a guy that recently went out. Nice guy. We go around in this big book study, and each of us reads a paragraph, right? And we're reading all about more about alcoholism, right? And we're reading this more about alcoholism, and when it comes to this kid, he gets to read the paragraph that says, "And I went out, and my friend said that I needed to find a power greater than myself, or for sure I would drink again," right? And lo and behold, he did. You know, and everybody started kind of laughing, right, when he started to read it, because we all were like, "Told you." You know, if there's one thing that you know, if you want to take anything away from it, it's like you got to come to some terms with this higher power deal. You know, and for me, how does that happen? There's like 50 people reading one paragraph after next, and it falls on him to read that exact paragraph. There's crazy things that happen in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's God shots like that keep me coming back and keep me believing that there is something better than me that's directing my life. You know, as I said, I've been so blessed, but we've had our share of heartaches. My husband and I tried to have children, and I lost 2 babies, and I went into a deep depression. And I went into a depression when I was 10 years sober, and I couldn't climb out of the hole. And I talk about it from the podium because there are many people in this room who suffer from depression. And it's very, very difficult to stay sober when you're depressed, because what you want to do and what I wanted to do was shoot myself. I wanted to commit suicide. I wanted to just end it. And I want you to know that I was able to survive that. It took a year to pull myself out of that dark, dark hole, but I was able to do it, you know? We've also lost sponsors. I've buried 1 sponsor. My husband has buried 2 sponsors. We were with his first sponsor when he was dying of cancer, you know, and what we've been taught in Alcoholics Anonymous is to show up. And we did. We showed up at his bedside while he died from cancer, dying of cancer. And we showed up when my sponsor, Corinne Chaney, she had 51 years of sobriety. We did a little meeting the night before she died in the hospital with her, you know. And that's what it's about. That's what AA has allowed me to do, is it's allowed me to show up and be there not only for my family, but for people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. You were mentioning that these are our friends, right? We have trusted friends here, you know. And all my people that are in my life today, 99.9% of them are alcoholics, sober alcoholics, you know. And I'm grateful for that. My husband would have been here tonight. You heard him speak not too long ago. He's a big book thumper, and I don't hold it against him, but he's always saying, you know, when he quotes everything accurate and stuff, you know. I can't do it. But, you know, he would have been here tonight. But he, you know, this is just another wonderful thing of Alcoholics Anonymous. He was adopted. And I put him up on the registry because we were sober and we could do things like that. And and so we put him up on the registry. 15 years later, we get a call. And it's from a man, an executor of a La Jolla estate. And they said, you know, are you so-and-so RB? And he said, yep. And he said, you know, I think I found your original adoption papers and you may have brothers and sisters. And that was 4 years ago. And we found out that he has this sister and this brother in Boulder, Colorado that are like super cool and super athletic and pretty much, for the most part, normies. And, you know, it's kind of like God gives us what we need when we're ready for it, right? And they needed a big brother, you know? They needed a big brother. And when they met him, and they met a really outstanding man, a really outstanding man. And, you know, I love that story. It's like an Oprah story, man. And because if they would have met him like 26 years ago, they would have like closed the door on him, right? But no, you know, and that's the gifts that we're given today. You know, it's just amazing how beautiful it is. And so tonight, he's in Boulder with his brother and sister, lest he would be here with me. And, you know, I got to tell you, when I got to the district attorney's office, we got these badges, really. It's a real badge. And I was like, holy shit, you know, this is one of the other divine interventions, right? And my boss said, you know, if you use that badge anywhere, you'll get your pink slip. And I'm like, damn, you know, what's the fun of having a badge if you can't, like, show it every once in a while, right? So I took it home, you know, and I had a chihuahua named Ramon, and I deputized that chihuahua with that badge. I made him sit down, and I deputized his ass. And that's the extent of my badge use. But, you know, I say this stuff only because it's funny to me. It's funny that I ended up where I am. You know, instead of breaking the law, I'm making the law. You know, I'm in a wonderful marriage to a wonderful man. I have more than I could ask for. I mean, I live in a beautiful home. I drive a beautiful car. I have a great job. I have beautiful friends. I have beautiful women in my life that allow me to help them. And believe me, if you're a sponsor in this room, you know that our sponsees keep us sober. And, you know, those phone calls that we don't want to take, they turn on the light bulb for me, you know. And, I got to say, my sponsor, I love my sponsor, Judy A. She's up in Washington taking care of her mother. And, she's a wonderful, wonderful woman. And I'm so lucky that I have had very, very good sponsorship in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I just want you to know that this is the easier, softer way for those of you who come in and go out and come in and go out. If you just give it a chance, give yourselves a chance. Give yourself a break and remember that all you have to do is give up the bottle and you'll be given the keys to the kingdom. God bless you and thank you.